I feel insecure. In the past, after I read those tasks, I still teach directly because if I don't teach directly, I feel insecure. So I use the task like mix. I read one of your blog posts, like at first you guys also use task one day or 2 days, but in the end you transition to task every day. There's a blog post with slide listing.
How can you transform your middle school classroom with problem-based lessons while overcoming personal insecurities and teaching doubts? So in this Mentoring Moment episode, we speak with Joanne Ward, a middle school teacher from Taipei, Taiwan, who is tackling a common challenge faced by educators, the uncertainty and lack of confidence in implementing problem-based lessons.
Stick around and you'll learn practical strategies to boost confidence in teaching with problem-based lessons. You'll also learn a comprehensive understanding of the real flipped classroom concept, enabling structured and effective problem-based learning that captivates and educates your students. This is another Math Mentoring Moment episode where we chat with a teacher just like you, who's working through some problems of practice, and together we brainstorm ways to overcome them. Welcome to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr. We are from MakeMathMoments.com.
This is the only podcast that coaches you through a six-step plan to grow your mathematics program, whether at the classroom level or at the district level.
And we do that by helping you cultivate and foster your mathematics program like a strong, healthy, and balanced tree. So if you master the six parts of an effective math program, the impact you have on your students and educators will grow and reach far and wide.
Every week, you'll gain the insight you need to stop feeling overwhelmed, gain back your confidence, and get back to enjoying the planning and facilitating of your mathematics program for the students or educators that you serve. Well, Math Moment Makers, we are really excited to have today's guest on for a Math Mentoring Moment episode. It's Joanne Ward. And hey, Joanne, it's awesome to reconnect with you. We have been in touch throughout many of
It's been a while.
It's been a while, actually. And actually, before we hit record, Joanne, you were saying that you've been math geeking out with us since the Tap into Teen Mind days and the Mr. Orr is a Geek days and all of those resources we were sharing way back when. So thanks so much for taking some time out of your busy world. And we want to hear all about you. How are you doing? Where are you coming to us from? And just give us a little bit of context as to what your role is in math education.
So I'm Joanne, and I'm currently in Taipei, Taiwan, and I have been teaching this year. It will be my 10th year. And then I spent 7 years in the high school, and that was back then when I'm reading everything on the Tap into Teen's Mind. And then later on, Mr. Kyle introduced me to Mr. John, and then I started to learn things about the lower level. And that's where I started to try to teach my own children. And then after 7 years in high school, I started to think that maybe going to middle school will be quite a transition and the fun. So then after 7 years, I have been moved to middle school. And then ever since I moved to middle school, I started to feel and explore everything, the resources in the Making Math Moments, because that kind of material really helps children to learn and help children to get excited about math. So I am so excited that Mr. Kyle and Mr. John spend their time to help me.
Awesome stuff, Joanne. We're pretty excited to have you because, like we said here, it's been a long time coming. And we're pumped to kind of dig into some of the pebbles that are rattling around in your shoe to kind of pluck them away, finally, as we meet after all this time. So before we get into all of that, do us a favor, Joanne. When we say math class, what pops into your mind from your experience as a student, or it's stuck with you all this time? What's your math moment when we say math class? What images come to mind in that memory that just sticks out to you? Tell us all about that, please.
So when I was young, my math moments is like the teacher is writing on the board and the teacher did a beautiful job, organize everything, organize all the concept, organize all the formula, and then separate questions into patterns. And then he or she will do this beautiful whiteboard writing and we just copy everything down. And I just follow that. So that was the math moments that I was growing up.
So that's when you think math class, that's what you think about. That's just stuck with you all this time, this complete same image day in, day out of organized notes going up on the board, right?
Yes, exactly.
I think we all have a memory of that. I know I do as well. And actually, I think for many math teachers, including us, I think that was like we were striving to like do that even better. Everybody wanted to have really well summarized notes because why? Well, we wanted it to be more understandable for students. We wanted it to be easier for them to learn and to consume, right? To be consumers of the information. And I'm wondering, at what point did you maybe start when you reached out and sort of found some of the Tapping a Teen Minds resources, which I was doing a lot of teaching in the high school classroom at the time? What motivated you to, I suppose, find that material? Was it by accident or were you searching for something to try to do something differently in your own math classroom?
I think I seem to remember that I was looking for resources like on Twitter back in those days. And then I saw a video of you and John, like you were eating the chocolate, like kisses. And then that too, that was unbelievable. That was the first thing that I love it so much. Kisses and then the giant red chocolate. And then you guys put that. Yes. So that was the first thing. And after that, I started to dig into Tap into Teen's Mind. And then Kyle, you make this spreadsheet that's so beautiful. It's task and task and task and task and task. So.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that task brings back the old memories, Kyle, of sitting in our kitchen and.
John, you're actually sitting like feet away from where we recorded that. Right, like just. Right. Across from where he's at right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think we felt very good after eating all of that chocolate and creating that task around volume, but also proportion. That was one of our kind of mixed different strands into the same task. So Joanne, let's kind of dig in here. You've been exploring resources. You've been dabbling with problem-based lessons. You've been active for 7 years in the high school classroom. You're in a middle school. You've transitioned. What's on your mind? What can we help with? What would be a pebble in your shoe that all three of us can kind of dig in and see if we can pluck out of there? And so when you go into class tomorrow or the next day, you're feeling a little bit more confident. You're feeling a little bit, things are a little bit streamlined in the way that you want. Tell us about what's bugging you right now.
I feel insecure. In the past, after I read those tasks, I still teach directly because if I don't teach directly, I feel insecure. So I use the task like mix. I read one of your blog posts, like at first you guys also use task 1 day or 2 days, but in the end you transition to task every day. There's a blog post with slide listing how you guys have been transitioned. And I really admire that, but I feel insecure. I feel like if I don't directly tell them something, they don't know something. And then I started to run some tasks. And in the end, I feel the students are in the middle of something that I still don't know if they understand. And I just feel insecure. I don't know what to do.
Hey, Math Moment Makers, Kyle here. And I've got just a quick message specifically for our district level mathematics decision makers out there. Do you feel like you're spinning your wheels when making district level goals for mathematics programming from kindergarten through grade 12? Setting new goals each year only to find little to no real shift in pedagogical practice or educator content knowledge across the district as a whole? Take a moment to book a short call with our team so we can learn more about your specific district and educator learning needs in mathematics so we can assist you in taking the first step of many in the right direction. Visit makemathmoments.com/district to book a web call with our team today. We have a limited number of spots for districts just like yours, so don't wait. Head to makemathmoments.com/district and grab a spot in our calendar now. So what it sounds like is that, and maybe I'd like to dig a little deeper here as to, I'm hearing that you're feeling insecure, maybe without having that sort of formalized direct instruction happening. And I also want to make sure that we're clear that if we go all the way back to some of our learning earlier in the journey, both John and I think feel that we almost strayed away from feeling that we were not allowed to do any direct instruction. And in more recent times, I would say in the last 5 years specifically, we've really tried to be verbal, be explicit about when direct instruction should be happening and that it should happen. So it's not a bad thing that direct instruction's being used. So I want to make sure that that's clear. But I wonder for you, is it that you're doing direct instruction every day and that you're trying to squeeze some tasks in almost like because you feel like you're supposed to? What does that look like and sound like for you right now? Because it sounds like you have some pressure. You feel like you should be doing something, but you are feeling like you can't stray away from this other thing over here. I want to make sure that we fully understand what it is that you're actually doing, because maybe it's all in our minds, right? Sometimes it's like we think we should be doing something different, but maybe things aren't actually as dramatic as they might seem inside our own heads.
So what I have been doing for a while, like ever since that I started to study your material, is that I will do direct instruction, make sure that they understand the basic concept, then I'll put them into tasks, like your three scaffolded tasks, like task one, and then time like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and see how they're doing. But I give them the task after I taught them the concept. So that's what I have been doing for a long time, is that I taught them first with a couple of slides. Basically, this is what it is, without going into teaching them what they are supposed to answer the question. But I still do it because that's what I have been learning growing up. And then give them the task. So at this moment, the task is more like a assessment or more like a review. Right.
Or an application.
Yeah, yeah. But I see John's class in your website. There is every day 1 minute moment, every day 2 minute moment, or Kyle's class. It seems like you go directly inside and the students just write on their table, write on the window.
It's just full blown graffiti everywhere.
It's just jumping right
in. Someone who's listening is going like, what is happening in those classrooms?
Where are they writing? Yeah. And Joanne, don't get us wrong too. Like when you're watching, say, those 30 days and 30 minute videos that I put out about what my class looked like in that time frame, I had already been teaching through problem-based lessons. We've been spiraling our classroom for years leading up to that point. But when I rewind and when I first grappled with problem-based lessons, and we've talked about it here numerous times about kind of our entry point, Kyle and I, before we spiraled our lessons, we were dabbling with three-act math tasks from Dan Meyer and kind of experimenting that way. But we taught them the same way you did. The way you just explained it is that I also saw it as I'm going to do my lecture style first, and then I will use this on my problem-solving day, or I will use this after we've done this to see if they can apply their knowledge that I've just given them into this world. And I'm going to rewind myself and my memory back to that moment because it feels very secure. Like you said, it's like I preloaded all of the information that they're going to need. And then I'm going to sit back and wait and see if they can solve this problem with the information. And sometimes that went well and sometimes that didn't. Sometimes it's like we ran out of time when we did it that way. And you're like, oh, how do I fit this full task in or this full lesson plan in after I've done my lesson plan? Because that can be very, very, very tight. And it's like, or if you take an extra day to do it, you're like, oh, I ran out of time. So I'm curious about your students and what they're doing on that part. So fill me in. You've pre-taught a lesson and then you introduce this task, you introduce this problem, and they start to work on it. Are they jumping in right away? What are they typically doing around that? And then what makes you feel like, hey, this isn't working?
Like you said, I always ran out of time. It's a typical day that I will just run out of time. And then I will give them the task, like task number one, question number one, the full task. And then they will jump in. But I never get that kind of discussion that I see it from you guys' classes. And I kind of feel that if I teach them first, I kind of set them up for the formula. So what I see them more like doing is just solving it instead of exploring it.
Right, right.
And my wonder, and this is something that kind of popped into my mind as you were describing the idea of using the direct instruction and then giving the task. And I think you described it exactly how I envisioned it would probably go in my mind, which is you're essentially assessing where students are after the fact, which is not a bad practice to have, right? Like that's not something that we want to completely remove, because at times we're going to want to do that as well. But if what we're looking for is introducing a concept, if what we're looking for is using a task to engage in true problem solving where students are really engaging, my wonder is if you're after the exploration, then we have to be cautious not to sort of do the exploring for them. We call it doing that pre-teaching, because if we do the pre-teaching, then students are kind of waiting for us to do most of the heavy lifting, right? They're waiting for us to do all the work. And I mean, I know how I was as a student, and the teacher sometimes would say, work on this example and then we'll take it up. I was the type of student that I would just sit and wait. I did not think about it. I didn't even read the question. I would just sit and wait. And that was either my daydream time. We didn't have cell phones when I was in high school, but I vividly remember just sort of being like, well, this is my time to maybe goof around with my friend. Or if it was a strict teacher, then it would just be like my time to just stare and sit doing nothing. I'm not necessarily proud of that, but I think it's human nature that when we have these opportunities to sort of sit and wait and kind of conserve that thinking time or thinking energy, our natural response is going to be to kind of sit and wait. So if I'm wondering for you, is that something that you're really seeking? Are you going, the reason I want to use these problem-based lessons is so students explore? And I guess my wonder for you would be, how often would you like to see that? Because maybe it's every day, maybe it's twice a week. How often are you looking for that sort of engagement? And is it just in general that maybe you want to see your class shifting in terms of the culture? We talk about the culture a lot. And oftentimes we're essentially creating a culture in our room when we get into certain routines. So if the routine is always that I tell you how, and that students will then show that they were listening or show that they understand what I just said, then that's what that culture is going to be, which probably means not a whole lot of discourse. Students aren't going to engage in too much math conversation. It probably means they're not going to try to think outside of the box because, I mean, I want to impress the teacher, right? The teacher did it that way, so I'm going to do it that way. That's got to be the most efficient way. And at the end of the day, it might still lead to students knowing the math procedurally, but it might restrict them from kind of building some of those problem-solving skills. So I said a lot there. I'm wondering, what are you hoping? If you could wave a magic wand, what would you like to see happening in your classroom on a regular basis or a certain number of days a week? Wave the magic wand right now and sort of paint us a picture of what you'd like to see. What would you like to keep that you have already? And then what are the new things that you'd like to see happening as well?
I think you got the extremely valuable point, like the culture. I saw that in your website. And then at the moment when I saw it, I didn't quite get it, but now I get it. That's a culture that I want to see, because at this moment, what I have been doing, if I teach them first and use a task, then it's kind of the task is exactly the same, like a word problem. It's just a more elaborate word problem. But then that's not what I want to see. I still feel at this moment, my routine is very structured. And the students, like you said, I believe they just space out from time to time.
You said the word structure, and I think I've always taught in my classroom very, very structured. And I taught lecture style to begin. Oh, I'd be like, hey, here's the pre-teaching. Here's everything you need to know about what we're talking about here today. I'll show you a practice problem, but then I'll show you another one, and then I'll show you a tougher one that's a word problem. That was very structured. But when I shifted to problem-based lessons, like the lessons you're just talking about, the lessons that you can find on our website, to me, those are also very structured. But it's getting what Kyle is saying is that one type of structure, the lecture style structure, is saying, I'm going to convey all this knowledge. I'm doing all the thinking and they're doing all the mimicking, as Peter would call it. Peter Littledahl would call it. We've talked with him on the podcast a number of times. And then whereas when I teach the other way, when I don't pre-teach, when I start with a problem, I'm very structured because of the way I structure the wonder portion, the curiosity portion of that. It's very structured when we do and utilize the five practices for orchestrating productive mathematical discussions, those five different practices around the room with our vertical boards. That's a very structured, even though if an outside teacher walks in, that to them, it might seem very unstructured. But it is very structured in the way that we structured this experience for students to engage in thinking. And they are now engaged in thinking, and we are actively, as teachers, ensuring that that thinking continues. And as soon as we start to consolidate, or as soon as you start to end that lesson, parts of it were saying, well, when am I going to get my students to stop thinking? My goal is to never get my students to stop thinking, so that structure still is there. So I think what you're wanting to decide at this point is, where do I want to place this structure? Do I want to keep my structured approach so that I feel more secure in what I'm doing every day, because you know you can get your lesson out and you know the timing of that? Or do you want to shift so that you take a chance and go, you know what, I'm going to try this other structured lesson and it's very structured, but my goal has shifted though. My goal is to not just get my lesson out and say I taught it. My goal is to get my students thinking more. And they're thinking about these concepts. And at first, it's going to take extra time. It's going to be scary. It's going to make you feel insecure. But I'll promise you one thing. The more you do it, the more secure you will feel. Because at the end of a really good experience, and you said, today, so many kids were thinking more than they were thinking the other way. And if you feel good about it, you'll be like, I'm doing that again tomorrow. That's when you decide, have I done enough of those lessons, or how many should I do? Because that's a common question. How many of these problem-based lessons, or how many times should I get my students to think, is really what they're asking. And you're saying every day you want your students to think. How can I structure my lesson every single day so that they're thinking? Sometimes it involves this three-act math style lesson where we're getting them to wonder and notice and build curiosities. But sometimes we're structuring it to keep them thinking in a different way, but still you're not doing all the pre-teaching up front. It's a matter of when that teaching happens, and the teaching for now has shifted for us almost every single day to near the end of the lesson. Sometimes it comes in the middle for a little bit, and then we go back to thinking, and then we come back at the end, and we kind of tie it with a bow when we close our lessons, and we make sure that that thinking is consolidated at that point. But that teaching can happen then, and that's when it mostly happens in my class. So I don't know, I said a lot, John. How are you feeling about the structure of the lesson and which structure I think you're aiming for?
I think what you said is very precious. I took you guys' workshop back in those days, and then that's when you taught about the five principles of the orchestration, the discussion. And at that moment, like, I think I heard it, but now as you explain, I think I started to get it. Yes, I agree with you. You guys' lesson are super structured and your task is super structured. It's just, I want to transform my class into your structure, but not the current structure. I want to see that happening.
What I'm sensing, like, we're digging deeper here. And what I want to ask next is why? Because I remember back when you did our online workshop, and you were a very, by the way, fantastic student, because you were very active. You did all of the lessons and responded in the community areas and lots of reflecting. So when you look at the roadmap that's created for you to essentially craft the experience that you're telling us on this particular call right now that you're after, what is holding you back from doing what we've articulated in the past and back in the workshop as the real flipped classroom? This idea of, like, what you're doing right now is the exact opposite order of how we would say in that course that we want to try to avoid that pre-teaching. That was one of the big takeaways from one of the modules. And we guided through the process on how to do that. What is holding you back from, because it's almost like at the beginning of the call, it was almost like you were kind of like, felt like it was an either or. But in our workshop, we actually say it's not an either or. It's actually just flipping it. and going,
yes,
do the task first. What's holding you back from trying that? And then always knowing that what's coming next is that part, that what will feel more structured to you, even though, like you articulated, all of our problem-based lessons are very structured, but
yes,
in a different routine. Have you just not ripped the Band-Aid off to try it? Or have you tried it and it wasn't successful in the past? How come we're talking to you many years later and you're like, I haven't done it yet? Because there's got to be something here and it hasn't come out yet.
I think it's my transition from high school to middle school, back in high school, because those kids are very mature, especially if I teach 11th grade, 12th grade, and then I throw the task up front, then they can just do it back in high school. But then now I transition to middle school. I seem to remember that I try to toss the task one time and then the whole class is chaotic. And then I just don't know how to.
So the real issue just came to the surface.
Well, I think when you say chaotic, but I think I caught something right before you said chaotic too, is I think you were worried that they won't be able to do anything. How do I give them a task and then they don't know how to do the math that I'm supposed to help them with? Is that where the worry is? And then it's like chaotic because it's like, oh my gosh, no one is attempting anything. Because how are they supposed to do it if I don't tell them how to do it? Is that what it is?
Yeah, because in the past, I was teaching 12th grade, 11th grade, and now I also have 5th grade. And I all of a sudden, from this very big to this very small, and the very small will just ask me all the questions all the time. But you guys teach even younger students, and you can do it. So,
you know what? I want to give you something today, and I hope that this is something that will be a game changer for you, is that when you do something one time, and we have talked about this before on the podcast, we talk about it in the workshop, is one of the hardest parts of making this transition is the transition, that initial step. And here's the interesting part. It's almost like somehow, some way, we think humans, we're all the same. We all think very similarly in this way, that we think that we can make a massive change in how we're going to do something like teaching a math lesson that you've done for 10 years and you experienced yourself in the same format for your 12 years and beyond into university. We did this in one particular way for our entire life. And then we think somehow that the first time that we try to change it up, that it's going to go well. And I'm hoping that what I'm telling you is going to land with you. As educators, by making these changes, it is not going to be easy. And we can extrapolate this to other parts of our life. Think about, like, if you want to change your diet and you go, I've always eaten this way and I want to cut out sugar, or I want to cut out caffeine, or I want to cut out alcohol, or whatever it is that you're trying to cut out. Those are massive, massive shifts. And that is totally, totally something that you really got to be able to go, you know what? When I take this on, if I truly want it, I have to be okay with giving myself the grace and the time and the reflection that you're going to need, that's going to be necessary for you to go, what didn't go well there and why? Because there's always a why, right? It's not a you, it's not a them. And then there is this massive barrier that they are used to learning it a certain way too. So that's going to take a lot of time too. So you're trying to learn, they're trying to figure out what the heck's my teacher trying to do here. And there's going to be a little bit of this, I say a little bit, it's going to be a lot, which might mean that you might have to make some small changes along the way in order to lead you to the big change, right? So breaking it down a little bit and going, you know, I'm going to start by always starting with a task, and I'm going to give them at least X number of minutes to work on it. And I'm going to try my best to not interfere for that many minutes and only ask questions, not give answers, and slowly work your way down that path. But whatever it is that you choose, I think right now, you said you waved a magic wand and you want your class to have more exploration, more math talk and discourse and get students thinking. And it's like, until you take that first step and you stick with those steps, because if you took the step, but then you went back and you kind of went backwards. So it's like it never happened. So it's like, you're going to have to take that first step and you're going to go, oh, this does not feel good. And then you're going to have to take the next step and you're going to be like, this still doesn't feel good. It's going to take a while for you to get to that place. And of course, you don't want to just do it blindly. You're going to have to be reflective and you're going to have to really be thinking like and committed to this journey. Because what you don't want to do is to just take blind steps and just keep going. And then you find out down the road that you're like, oh, I have no idea what's going on here. There's no structure anymore. And all of a sudden, nobody wins in that particular scenario. So what do you think when I tell you that, when I'm kind of pushing you a little bit here? We know you well, we've seen you learning in the past. And when we heard that you had this struggle, we really wanted to, I think, be a little bit more forceful with our push over the edge. Where's your head at now? How do you feel? Are you nervous? Are you excited? Are you sad? Are you happy? How are you feeling? And what do you think your big takeaway is and the next step that you're going to make?
Hey there, Math Moment Makers. Are you a dedicated listener? Like, I'm talking, have you been listening for a couple months, maybe even a couple years? Well, if you haven't taken a moment to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform, it would mean so much to us. It'll take you under 1 minute so that you can help more educators see and experience the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. Do us this huge solid. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And here is today's episode.
I feel hopeful. Like, I'm so thankful for both of your time and what you and John said is very precious to me. There's this small thing, especially when you mentioned like getting rid of bad diet and bad habit. And that's exactly what it is. That's, I have to break through this thing, not just see it one day and then go back and then I'll feel more secure and then won't keep wandering.
I love it. I love it. I think you're going to make some waves. I feel it. And actually, what we should do, Joanne, we should check back with you in a little bit. So it's like, we're going to say, hey, Joanne, you're going to go off. You're going to limit the pre-teaching. We're going to choose some appropriate tasks. We're going to look at some tasks that kind of slowly turn the math dial up, as Dan Meyer would call it, right? So if you go back and look at some of our middle school tasks on our website, you'll notice that we don't jump right into the task because that's when kids will be like, I don't know what to do. It's slowly introduced different layers until they're knee deep into it already. So we know you're going to go do it because you've got the background, you've got that course under your belt, you've got all the resources in your hands, and we're going to check back with you in like 6 months and we're going to see, Joanne, how have you done in your classes by taking this leap, like Kyle's saying? So what do you say? You game for checking back in say 6 months?
Yeah, and I'll write it down every day, like how I feel.
I love it. And here's one thing I want you to write down as well. So I love that you're going to do that. That's going to be so helpful. But I want you to for sure write down at least one thing that went well, even if overall you didn't like how the whole thing went. So I want you to find what was one positive, even though, because our brains are going to go to all the things that didn't go well, right? So you've got a lot of practice in how you've always been teaching. And I'm going to bet that the way you're doing that is probably really, really great. And that there's a lot of great things that are happening there. So we don't want to throw all of that out, right? You can still do some of this work, but we're just going to flip it around for now. And you're going to find that, you know what, maybe some of the stuff that I was summarizing so beautifully for my kids, maybe I didn't need to do that. But I'll never know because I always did it first and I didn't know what they could or couldn't do yet. And I didn't know what to focus more on. So really with this goal, I think if you stick to it, you're going to find that at first it's going to be odd. It's going to be awkward. Some days are going to, your heart's going to race a little more, right? You might feel like anxious or nervous because you're like, I'm not sure how this is going to go. But over time, as you do this more and more, you're going to start to pick up on things that your students are doing that show you, that essentially turn it into the task into a diagnostic tool instead of it being like more of a formative or even a summative tool in some cases, right? Where we teach a whole lesson and go, Now show me what you can do. Now we're doing it the opposite way, where we go, what can you do and what you can't do? That's what I'm going to focus my direct instruction time on, right? Because, okay, so now I want to make sure that we bridge the gap here, but we don't waste time on this area that everybody seems to be doing really, really well. So I love that you're up for the challenge. We're so excited for you. And hey, we want to thank you for being a long, long listener, first time caller, though I think it would be, as they say. And we wish you all the best. And we can't wait to check in with you 6 months down the road.
Thank you so much.
All right, Joanne, thanks so much. Take care.
All right there, John. What a great conversation with our wonderful, wonderful colleague, Joanne. Joanne comes to us from the US, but usually teaching overseas for most of her career. And we've been in touch over a number of years. She continues to work through that common pebble we all struggle with. This comes up quite often. We have certain ideas in our mind that we want to put into place in our classrooms. We have certain outcomes that we want for our students. We even recognize that some of the practices that we use are not going to help us to get to that outcome that we're after. But the way we were taught tends to stick with us, and it is a really, really tough habit to break. So today, when we're talking about that math program, our tree, our math classroom tree, thinking about the six parts of the tree, one thing that I'm noticing is that her beliefs and mindsets are in the right place. She has the right ideas in mind. Joanne wants the best for her students. She wants to make some progress in this direction, but some of the habits are sort of stuck. And I'm going to focus today on the trunk of the tree, that culture, that classroom culture, the structures in place in our classroom, because she knows the pedagogical moves she wants to make. So she knows what she wants her branches to be on this tree. But I think it's deeper than that, in that we have to actually get to the trunk. We have to start thinking about, how do I actually break some of these habits that we have in place that are hindering us from taking that next step in the right direction towards what we call the real flipped classroom. John, what was your big takeaway from today, and what part of the tree is sort of lighting up for you?
For me, I think my big takeaway from our conversation is almost like a reminder that when we set goals for ourselves and we say we want that, that we can take baby steps to get there, but it's about kind of that consistency. How can we create that consistency so that it doesn't become the hurdle? It doesn't become like, I want that, or I'm aiming for that, but I need to get there. It's like, to build our confidence, we need to take little steps that get us in the right direction until we build that confidence up. We can't just jump to confidence. It just has to be built over time. So if you also need to figure out or think about your classroom tree, there are six areas of the classroom tree that you can strengthen. You should head on over to makemathmoments.com/report. Fill out that quick assessment. It's going to send you a detailed custom report and say which of the six you should focus on next. And we give you some really detailed next steps in there to kind of take that journey and start to kind of strengthen that area up. It also shares the other areas and how to strengthen those areas up too as well. But that can be a really great first step.
I love it. Friends, this was another Math Mentoring Moment episode, and we can't record these episodes without folks like you bringing forward some of the pebbles that you have in your shoe. And something I find most interesting is that most people who do come on for Mentoring Moment episodes start off sharing their pebble by saying, I think you guys have already talked about this before.
Right.
So that's what you're thinking in your mind right now. And the reality is, you know what? We probably have, but it doesn't mean that the pebble is gone, right? People are still struggling with these pebbles. So bring your context, bring your specific scenario to us so that we can have a great conversation. Because, hey, we are over 275 episodes into this. I believe today this is 276. And guess what? We still have some challenges in the math classroom. So you're not alone. People appreciate hearing others who are struggling with similar pebbles. So this isn't about being a unique pebble. Bring the pebble that you are working on right now, and we will be talking to you on an upcoming episode. And you can do that by heading to makemathmoments.com/mentor. And you can tell us that short pebble, grab a spot in the calendar, and we'll see you on an upcoming episode. Once again, makemathmoments.com/mentor to come on a future episode. Well, Math Moment Maker friends, I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr.
High fives for us.
And a high
five
for you.
If you are a district leader of mathematics, a math coach, a math curriculum coordinator, a superintendent, a principal, getting teacher buy-in for effective math teaching practice is top of mind. And plans only go so far. You can make, you know, detailed plans and carefully designed goals with clear objectives and key results that are measurable. But that can feel like it all falls flat if we can't engage our teachers in the work. Working with teachers who do not want to change their teaching practices is one of the most frustrating and challenging parts of our job. How do I help teachers engage in effective teaching practices when they keep pushing us away? If you can't reach the tipping point in mass adoption of effective mathematics teaching strategies, then it's likely we won't see student improvement in mathematics. We have a free training an accompanying workbook for leaders of mathematics like you. The Make Math Moments team, myself, John, and Kyle, walk you through our four-stage process we use with district partners to create clear, measurable, sustainable PD action plans, but more specifically on how to also get teacher buy-in so that it drives student engagement. So step one, register for this free training, get your planning workbook, and then watch the training. Schedule some time on your calendar so you can watch it and go through the workbook. After completing that workbook, you're going to have a clear, measurable vision, action plan for mathematics to get more teacher buy-in, but also be able to hit your goals for the 2024-2025 school year. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/4stages to start this free training.